ya lo hace, pierna derecha, directo al arco, ¡golazo! ¡Golazo!
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Thursday, July 18th, 2019. This is my new studio. It looks very, very much the same for you people at home watching and listening, but I have moved in the last 2 days, Dwayne, and you know, it's when you move that you realize that you always hoard way too much stuff.
That is true. I have moved several, well, I haven't in a while, but I've moved several times in several years, and eventually my possessions shrunk and shrunk and shrunk, and I don't miss them anymore, although I do kind of want to get more back soon, but that's just me.
My scarves, my football scarves collection, it's well and good when it's installed and it's on the wall or something, but to put them all in a box, well, a few boxes, takes a lot of space in a moving truck.
I have 17 football scarves. 12 of them are TFC, so there you go. But I have like weird ones. I have a PSG scarf for some reason. Why do I have a PSG scarf?
I have a Florida Panthers hockey soccer scarf. Don't ask questions. I don't know why, but I have that. Thanks.
When I was in Montreal last, I went to a thrift store because I like to thrift. I'm a hipster that way. And I saw an Atlanta Thrasher jersey, and I almost bought it because I thought it might be worth money. Are Atlanta Thrasher jerseys worth money yet?
I don't think they're vintage yet. Are they? Is it 20 years and over? I don't know. But welcome to Soccer Today for Thursday, July 18th. Tour TFC played last night. Dwayne, obviously, big win. We'll talk about the win in a second. We'll talk also about the midweek review, but let's start with a bit of Canadian content. Jonathan David of Ghent has been rumored to have a price tag attached around him now. And at 25 million euros is supposedly the price tag for Jonathan David. So if you want the now prolific Canadian striker, it'll cost you 25 million euros.
Yeah, that's the price they put on 25. That's a lot. That would be the biggest sale in Canadian history. It would bypass what Alphonso Davies went for. I suspect that Ghent, and it's Ghent, not Genk, it's very easy to mix up, would probably go a little bit cheaper than that. You're always going to, list higher than what you want and then barter down. But nonetheless, it illustrates just how much value this player has in the market right now and how much interest he has. And if you look at some of the teams he's linked to, it's pretty interesting. Ajax is one of them, and that's the one that caught my attention. I mean, I think I'd lose my mind if a young Canadian, a 19-year-old Canadian, went to Ajax. I'd be like, oh, what is happening? What world are we in? He's also linked to West Ham. He's linked to Galatasaray. He's linked to Mönchengladbach, a couple other German teams. I think Germany's probably where he ends up, but certainly a lot of interest in Jonathan David, and I think that this is the third transfer season in a row that we've been looking at Canadian players and wondering where they're going to go. It's almost like we're part of the world football scene now.
We finally made it. We're finally part of the equation. But that's the interesting, too. You mentioned the teams interested in Jonathan David, and that's where it gets interesting to me. Like, it's one thing to be signed by Barcelona and Bayern Munich, have to fight for your playing time and being loaned out and being viewed as a project that they can make money off in the long term. That's one thing. But paying $25 million for a player, if you're West Ham, if you're Galatasaray or a club at that level, which is a top flight club around the world, but not the best of their league, a mid-table to high mid-table, depending on the season team. And that reason, if you pay $25 million for a player, Dwayne, because you think he can help you right now, you think he can be a star player for your team at that price tag, when's the last time West Ham paid $25 million for anyone? So that gives me an indication that he's viewed and seen as a better potential, even if not better player right now, than what Davies or Ballou have gathered as attention over the last few years.
No, look, the market's inflated. There's no doubt. The prices are higher than they would have been a couple of years ago. So this $25 million, if you put it into like an inflation calculator, it's like $12 million a few years ago. But that's still impressive. And if you're, you know, Mönchengladbach or West Ham, as you say, you're not spending $12 million on a guy unless you have plans for him. So this is where I sort of differ from other Canadian fans who are still cautious. We have this, I don't know, sort of instinct in this country to instantly believe that, oh, we got to put the brakes on, pump the brakes, because maybe he won't play. To me, I'm like, yeah, if these guys want to pay $25 million for him,
yeah, they're going to make him,
yeah,
play him.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
First off, the kid gets paid, right? Like, I mean,
yeah,
you get a percentage of that transfer. So he's set for life if that happens. So we're cheering for this, honestly. And look, as I said, I'm going to say Gladbach again, because Gladbach's where I want him to go. I think that's the perfect fit in terms of the best league. I think Germany's the best league. Germany has a great history of sort of taking young players to the next level. Germany has a great history of playing young players. Gladbach has a history with Canadians. Gladbach is a team that's right in the right level of competing for Europa, and also, you know, not being Bayern, basically, or Dortmund. So he will play.
Yeah.
I think that's the perfect fit for him.
That would be a perfect fit, and it fits into the description of a West Ham or Galatasaray. Of course, Galatasaray is one of the biggest clubs in Turkey, but in the world equation of the world of football, it is similar to a West Ham, I would say, or to a Mönchengladbach, which those are all potential destination if Ghent does sell. Jonathan David, J. Dave, is quickly becoming the best, if not already, the best striker wearing the Canadian men's national team uniform. A busy Wednesday night in Major League Soccer. Dwayne, let's take a quick look here for the video listeners at the result last night. Let's start with a bit of Vancouver talk, and we're going to lay the grassroots work for tomorrow's show. Tomorrow, Dan Riccio of the Sportsnet Fan 650 in Vancouver joins us to talk about the Vancouver Whitecaps and their struggles. A big loss on the road last night. New England 4, Vancouver 0. There's a hashtag that's been making its way around the Vancouver circles, Dwayne, and it's not MDS out. No, no, no. It's hashtag...
I hope not.
No, it's hashtag no playoffs.
Well, no something else. Like, no four letters starts with an S. I don't think anyone thought the Vancouver Whitecaps were a playoff team going into the season. Certainly neither of us did. I think I picked them last in the West, and you picked them second last in the West, if memory serves. So this isn't necessarily a surprise, but it is a painful situation for the Whitecaps fans. We made jokes, and they weren't really jokes. They were observations at the start of the year that there were two expansion teams in MLS this year, Cincinnati and Vancouver, and both of them marked Atlanta. So they're struggling. They don't have the talent there, right?
Yeah.
It's MBS. Look, and this is an illustration. MBS is a brilliant manager at getting the most out of the least, so to speak. But at MLS, where you need the top-end talent, you need that spend at the top three players of your roster, basically, to be a true contender. The Whitecaps just don't do it. And they, you know, the time has long passed. Like, it used to, when we first started talking about this, and I was critical of this theory of the Whitecaps that they could be, like, you know, the Moneyball team of MLS. I was critical of it back in the time, but then you could sort of make the argument. You could, like, make the argument with a straight face that you could compete in MLS back then. You can't anymore. Like, you just can't. Like, the teams that dominate this league have top-end DP talent. And when I say top-end, I'm talking about 2 million plus DP talent, and Vancouver has never shown a willingness to invest at that level. And I'm not sure why. They're one of the better supported teams.
And it's not like they don't have the money or the allocation money right now to do so as well. Of course, the Alphonso Davies transfer money is there to be spent. And so far, the spending hasn't been up to par to the expectations created by high dollar sign next to the transfer amount hasn't really come to fruition. But one thing that Mark Dos Santos didn't mention last week and on the next last few days, and I think is interesting to talk about, and we'll obviously talk about it more tomorrow with Dan Riccio, Dwayne, is his mea culpa. His maybe an indication that he did a few mistakes building his roster. He mentioned that he brought maybe too many rookie players in of this league at the same time, and it took a while for everyone to get the ball rolling, if you understand my metaphor. So I think that that's a valid point by Mark Dos Santos. There is such a thing as bringing a lot of outside players in MLS, and we've talked about this for years now. There is such a thing as making sure you have the 1-2 MLS lifers, we call them. We used to call them the American players, but now it's not just American players. The Justin Merrem, I think, is a great example. MLS lifers that can come to your roster, bring a certain amount of stability, bring, of course, leadership, but also knowledge of leagues, knowledge of players, little tips and tricks that they can share with their new teammates that can facilitate their acclimatization period in this league.
No, 100%. And look, I know Whitecaps fans are not going to be happy with me comparing them to TFC, particularly the TFC I'm about to compare them to, but this reminds me a lot of TFC back pre-2014, where they just did not seem to get it through their thick heads that stability was the key to success in MLS. And this is the Whitecaps that completely flipped it over. They weren't a great team last year under Carl Robinson, by no means. They underachieved, but to flip as many players as they did was madness. It really was. They made themselves into an expansion team. This is not a joke, as I said a minute ago. It is an observation. They have, 17 new players this year. It makes sense that they're going to struggle. It really does. I think in MLS, when you have a salary cap, we talk about MLS lifers and we talk about stability. The reason that works is because there's a familiarity which sort of boosts them. Imagine FIFA, your game. If you play the same players over and over again, they might be a 6 out of 10 in whatever their attribute is normally. But if they play together with 7 other 6 out of 10s, maybe they become a 7.5 out of 10, right? That's kind of the key here, and Vancouver certainly doesn't have it. So the key for the Whitecaps moving forward is to not panic and to see this through. It's not a good year. This is going to be when the Whitecaps win an MLS Cup, if and when, they will talk about this year the same way TFC fans talk about 2012, right? Like, it's going to be the bottom. This is where they're starting from, to quote Brick. Can they get to the top? It depends on how patient they are. And I do think they need to have, change sort of a direction a little bit. They don't need to spend $25 million on DPs, Kevin.
Well, no, of course not.
They need to spend $10 million on DPs, and that's just the reality of MLS right now.
Maybe $10 million over a couple of years, maybe one DP player that's from 3 to 5. If you do your due diligence and you do your homework and you scout correctly, it's not about the name. Who in MLS can honestly say they knew Nacho Piatti before he came to Montreal?
Well, no. I mean, or what hell, Javinko, really? I mean, Javinko
was a French player. Was a French player that I only knew because I played FIFA with Italy a few times in tournaments over the last World Cup before he came to North America, and that's why I knew him.
Like, yeah.
Who was Miggy Almiron? I have no idea, and I consider myself involved in the soccer bubble. I had no idea who Almiron was, but that's the point, and I guess they missed it. They missed the point.
No, precisely. They don't have to spend $25 million. This is another TFC reference where I'm making this, obviously. TFC spent $25 million because TFC was literally the worst team in the world when they did that, right? Like, I mean, Danny Kuperman's wasn't far off. So they had to make a big expense to get players there, and it worked. Now they don't, and that's why you're seeing a pivot in terms of their sort of approach. They're never going to be a cheap team, but they are going to reduce that a little bit. No one wants to pay, overpay for a Michael Bradley again. Michael Bradley's been brilliant for TFC, except for last night. We'll get that in a minute, maybe. But, that giveaway.
You mentioned pivot, and I just moved over the last couple of days. So for all the Friends aficionado out there, I only have one image in my head now, and it's pivot. Pivot. Get the couch. Pivot it in the corner stairs. Anyways, moving on. We mentioned Atlanta and a second ago, because Vancouver is not Atlanta. But Atlanta is Atlanta, Dwayne, this year. They're back. They're back at being a team in top form. 5 for Atlanta, 0 for Houston. A tough game for the Houston Dynamo. Of course, with a red card on the road in Atlanta in front of a sellout. Well, maybe not a sellout crowd, but a rowdy crowd for sure. It did make for a tough game for the Dynamo, Atlanta taking advantage. But Toronto FC last night versus the New York Red Bulls, the game Dwayne and I paid most attention to. Dwayne was present at the game. And Dwayne, this was your 200th Major League Soccer game attended live in your history of soccer, watching, covering, and all of those together.
It was. I did the math. I was waiting for friends, so I had nothing better to do. So I started to count, and I was like, oh, my God, it's 200. No, it's been a long and winding road that led me to, some strange places at times. But certainly last night was one of them, because in my 200th game, Kevin, I saw a unicorn. I saw a unicorn last night, Kevin. I saw Ashton Morgan score in front of me.
That's true. Ashton Morgan, the substitute, came into the game and scored Toronto FC's third goal.
It's like everyone loves that. Ashton is in his eighth year with the FC. He's only 28. He's a backup left back, a serviceable backup left back playing at home. This guy's probably going to play 18 seasons in this league, like, honestly, as a backup left back. And he'll have like 250 appearances at the end. But it was nice to see it. It was a great effort goal. It was a goal that Torontonians love. It was that grit and determination. It was a Darcy Tucker kind of goal.
Oh, geez. Because
of that hockey reference.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, look, it was just, look, I think that Quentin Westberg ended all debates on whether he's the number one last night with his performance.
Oh, yeah.
Because honestly,
and even make a big mistake too. Even making a big mistake, he still proved that. Yeah, it's Sunday, bloody Sunday. Bye, bye, Bono.
Yeah, no, and honestly, if you're a TFC, he's on 300,000+ a year as a backup keeper. Westberg is as good. You know, I'm not going to even sit here and make an argument that he's better. I'm not. I mean,
well, who cares? You don't have to be better.
I think he is. But in terms of the salary and the impact, you got to move him. Like, and Bono might have some value as the guy that has some U.S. national team.
Exactly.
Very little, but yeah.
and the U23 version. But I think you hit the nail on the head. We've talked about this with Tim Howard in Colorado over the last 2 years. Is goalkeeper really the position to spend your money at? Is it?
No.
To a certain point. You got your rookie goalkeeper, so your 55,000 goal, usually the 30 backup, who's either a young keeper or a very old keeper. Most of the cases, he's a very young one. That's fine. But the top two, you cannot spend $1 million on two keepers. You cannot spend $700,000 on two keepers. So if you have one on a high salary, he needs to play and bring you the points and bring you that salary cap value. And again, I'm talking about players and their name and their salary. And it always makes me feel a bit kind of dirty, feel like I need to take a shower. Every worker has a chance to work, and I am pro-labor in the world usually. So that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about more as an equation, as a strategist, how to build the best possible lineup. And of course, you have a salary cap. I didn't make the rules. There's a rule that you have only so much money. Okay, there's a few complicated rules, but the amount of money you can spend is finite. It's not infinite. It's finite. So you have to spend well. And spending $300,000 on one goalkeeper, and he's not playing, and he's not giving you that value, that's money you can either add to another position on the pitch that you have been struggling at, defenders, or it's a way to have some money in the bank when you're at this point of the season looking for potential reinforcement for the end of the season.
No, for sure. And look, with Gonzalez out there last summer, Gonzalez out there last night, TFC was a little better, but they still were shaky. I did some numbers last week, Kevin, and when Drew Moore plays, TFC allows 0.5 less goals per game than they do when he doesn't.
Every 2 games. Almost every couple of games. That's the goal that make you lose a game, right? That one goal every 2 games that you allow more, that's significant.
Yeah, no, as valuable as the 3 DPs are, and TFC's very good when they have 3 DPs out there. They are averaging 3 goals per game in the 6 games that they play for 3 DPs, but Drew Moore is almost more important for the reasons we just stated, because even last night, I think they were damn lucky Westbrook had a hell of a game. They scored three goals, and I would still vote the keeper as the player of the game. He made at least four huge saves. And the Bradley giveaway, oh, my God. You know, Michael Bradley owes that man a car now. Like, that was insane, that save. Like, it was right in front of us, too. But, yeah, it's you know, if TFC's going to continue this winning streak that they're now on and stretch it into something significant, they're going to need Drew Moore back out there. And I think Drew Moore with Omar Gonzalez beside him is an intriguing possibility. But Lamar Samal last night. I don't want to trade him. I don't want to get rid of him for human reasons. They should keep him absolutely for the year, but he clearly has not been a great signing on the pitch.
It's crazy how things quickly change in the world of football. A great player just a few years ago, not even. And I don't even blame him at all. I think it's circumstances from the outside. And sometimes stability in the world of sports is your best ally. And if there's one thing that Laurent Simon did not have over the last 3 years, and that's stability. And I guess we're seeing the reflect in his game, but you're right, for personal reason, Laurent Simon should be with Toronto at least for this season, and wherever his contract is, I think you have to honor that contract and not trying to deal him somewhere else like the Impact did before. But the Impact saw the writing on the wall too, but there were some personal things behind the scenes, and the story is often a lot more complicated, complex, and nuanced than just a good guy, a bad guy, who's right, who's wrong. But 3 years later, looking back at Laurent Simon, since his departure, his trade to LAFC, then from LAFC, his move to Dijon in France, and from Dijon, his move back to Major League Soccer and Toronto FC, it has been a very complex time for Laurent Simon as a football player.
No, for sure. And he's had moments here and there, and I don't think he's a, you know, as a backup center half, if you could get him on backup center half wages, we're talking about salaries again here, sure, he's fine, but you can't rely on him. And we saw a couple of mistakes last night that led directly to chances by New York. If they were a little more clinical in front of goal last night, they scored some of those. They scored at least one of those. So it is a challenge for them. You know, TFC's success, as I said, is going to depend entirely on keeping four players healthy. The three DPs, Drew Moore. And the fact Drew Moore didn't play last night suggests to me that they understand that. That it's you know, Kawhi is gone, but Kawhi's legacy lives on. Load management.
That's what I did over the last 2 days moving, Dwayne. Did some load management here in the studio. Alright, let's continue our review of the midweek games. Last night, as well, the last game was Chicago 2, Columbus 2. About 13,000 people at SeatGeek Stadium last night in Bridgeview to watch Chicago draw Columbus. Two teams that are having similar fates right now in the Eastern Conference. On the way down. Columbus on the way down. And it's a bit unfortunate because this year is the big, we saved us. We're going to have big projects and the new stadium and the training center that will take over basically where Crew Stadium is now, and the municipality sharing the stadium and bringing a lot of joy in the soccer community in Columbus. Unfortunately, that joy is not in the stands and on the pitch over the last few weeks.
Yeah, there were some reports last night that the actual attendance someone gave a number, and it was 7,500 people in Chicago, which is a massive issue for this league.
So 13,000 was the amount of tickets sold, and I guess 7,500 is people that decided that it was worth it for them to go to a place where they already bought their ticket.
And look, I mean, I'm not an attendance basher. It's difficult midweek. It always is, right? Like, people are work, and especially in Chicago, if you're working in the North End, and you're like, no, you just can't. You're not going to make it. Like, you just aren't.
You're going to miss half the game.
so you don't go. You go home and you watch it on TV. So I get it, but $7,500 is ridiculous, and it speaks to the need for that team to be downtown, which is they're doing. So we'll see what they do next year at Soldier Field. Not the ideal location in my mind, but at least it is more accessible than Bridgeview, which I like that stadium. I know it's a little run down. You saw rats there and all that, but it's not a bad stadium, but it's a terrible location. But anyway, in terms of the game, Kevin.
Yeah, the game was.
Yeah, there are eight teams in the East that have a realistic chance of the playoffs, and then there are the rest. And those two are in the rest.
With Orlando and Cincinnati. And, it's about sums it up.
Yeah, New England is outside, and I will give them a shot because they seem to be rolling into Bruce Arena right now, as much as that makes me
As this makes no sense. I guess the let's turn this thing as everyone against us and us against the world and let's battle and claw ourselves out of this hole. It's working in New England right now.
Yeah, and I'll hold my breath for a little bit. I won't hold my breath for too long on them continuing that. But at the same time, you have to acknowledge that they have been pretty good over the last little while. But yeah, outside of them, I think that the East playoffs are pretty set with the teams that are in there right now because you look at New York, Atlanta, and Toronto, which on paper are right there at the top. And all three, New York aside, the last night seemed to be trending in the right direction now. I can't see a lot of opportunity for anyone below that red line right now breaking through.
Well, the one opportunity is if Montreal continue their losing skid and continue to drop. Montreal was lucky, let's put it this way, was lucky throughout the season so far. When they lost games earlier on in the season, no one else in the Eastern Conference was interested in winning games, so they didn't lose ground, and they stayed where they were in the standings, which was second, third, fourth, and it stayed like this all year long, almost, until now. And now they're down to fifth, but with last night Toronto's win, Toronto's only 1 point behind the Impact. Dwayne, they would be, at this point, 7 points back if it wasn't for the win against Montreal. Montreal would have 7 points on Toronto right now if it wasn't for that game. It's crazy.
If TFC turns this around, they're going to point to that game. Absolutely. That was a massive game, both for confidence and for reinstilling belief in the market and everything else. If that, had they lost that game, last night would have been absolutely a must-win, and who knows how they respond to that. But it will be pointed to if they do turn this around. The East right now, good God, forget the East. Outside of LAFC, TFC right now, I'll give you a number. They're 6 points out of the number two seed overall in MLS right now, and they lost. They did not win in 9 straight games. They are 6 points out of the number two seed, which would mean if LFC doesn't win the West and they were able to overcome that, right, they would then host the MLS Cup. That is how tight MLS is this year outside of LAFC.
Yeah, LAFC has 46 points. The rest is 36 top of the East for Philly, 33 for the second spot in the East that you just saw. Now you see the Western Conference on your TV screens. But no, I agree with you. When I look at the East, though, the thing is, which we always follow a bit closely the East, and that's a bit of our geographical bias. It's because Montreal, Dwayne, Toronto, and yes, but we do love the Western Conference because we're both late owls and love watching soccer late at night. For some reason, it's my wind down process. I get home, empty my pockets, grab my little glass of water, sit down in the studio, put some soccer on, and I'm good to go for an hour.
That's fair enough. Typically, I empty my pockets before I get home, but that's my own issue. No,
that's why you lose everything. That's why you lose your keys.
Speaking of, oh God, no, I'm here. We love the West. I mean, but here's the thing: we'll have a bit of an Eastern bias because you guys got the sunshine out there. Like in February, I have to wear 7 layers, and you can wear shorts, so you win at California.
And yeah, California wins most of the time, in most of the sports too. But just to finish the show quickly, we know for TFC that win against Montreal last week and the win against the Red Bulls last night; those two wins are massive. And now TFC's in the conversation of just another good result combined with a bad defeat for a close, direct rival in the standings. Well, Toronto's in a position to host a playoff game. And if you host a playoff game with the situation of the weather, the support in Toronto, and a one-off game, becomes a tough place to play at. And we've seen this outside of last year's, the 2 years before. And that's the same thing for Montreal, too. Montreal now in fifth position. The three upcoming games for Montreal. You got Columbus on Saturday, travel to Columbus. Then you're playing midweek at home versus York 9, a team that gave you a tough go 2 weeks ago. And you drew 2-2 on the road against a Canadian Premier League team. And then you come back home to play the best team in the Eastern Conference, the Philadelphia Union. So you're talking about three big games in 8 days for Montreal. If they lose in the Canadian Championship, it will be a controversy in Montreal just because they lost to an inferior team. And that's never good for the morale, for the perception of the fans versus the team. And again, two big games in the Eastern Conference versus maybe teams that you will be confronted to at the end of this season, like Columbus, if they have a little surge for a playoff spot. So Columbus and Philly, a tough 8 days coming for Montreal starting on Saturday.
No, it's the key to their season, I think, in many ways. But we talked about Toronto a minute ago and how really they should be looking up, not down, in terms of the standings. I mean, any team in the East should be. So I'll repeat this for Montreal. Like, yeah, you can look at that half empty and say, like, if they struggle here, then they're in trouble. You can also look at this as half full. If they excel in these next games, they're pretty much probably going to the Voyageurs Cup final, which is a chance for the CONCACAF Champions League, which we all know Montreal loves.
And a chance to avenge the loss of last Saturday versus Toronto. This time, you can do it in the Canadian Championship, where you would continue your historical run as the team with the most amount of Canadian Championship in the history of the Canadian
Toronto's Championship. Toronto's getting close.
It's getting damn close. That's why this year is an important one.
Yeah. They're two away, by the way. But, nonetheless, actually, speaking of the Canadian Championship, Martin Bailey, I saw Martin last night at the stadium. He put a stat out the other day that TFC has scored in the last three Voyageurs Cup finals. TFC has scored in, like, beyond the 90th minute. The Voyageurs Cup final has been insanely dramatic 3 years in a row. So
the magic of the cup, Dwayne. That's the magic of the cup. And we'll talk about more about the Canadian Championship on the Two Solitude Soccer Podcast, which Dwayne and I still have to coordinate to see when we can record as soon as possible. The next day or so, we'll have the Two Solitudes Podcast for patrons only out for your listening pleasures. And we'll obviously touch on the Canadian Championship, which resumes with the second leg of the third round of qualifying next week. And of course, we'll touch on the one soccer controversy. When there's a delay in a game and your production TV production crew for your streaming website decides, yeah, we waited enough. There was a call. Someone just made a decision, but what's the accountability to that? Well, does it change how I view on soccer? Is the recording of the game and the habit of having the game always available on your platform more important than the cost and delay of a weather delay for a game? Those are all questions that we'll try to answer on the next Two Solitude Soccer Podcast. But until next time, for Dwayne Rollins, I'm Kevin Laramie. Make sure you follow us at Soccer Today SPN on Twitter, where we are live Monday to Friday around 11 a.m. in the morning Eastern Time. Make sure you go to our website, sportspodcastingnetwork.com, where you can find every on-demand version, podcast version of our shows. And everywhere you get your podcasts, you can subscribe to Soccer Today, to SPN, or other shows that we do have on the network. But for Dwayne Rollins, I'm Kevin Laramie, and until tomorrow, have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.